Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings and welcome to another Wednesday evening. This is the Voice of Indie podcast. I'm your host, Beam Weeks, and this is episode number 184. Boy, we are getting deep into the archives here. With me, as usual, is Mr. Stephen Jeeves. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing all right. We had a blast on last week's show. That would be number 183, is it?
Yes, that was.
That was
plus
pretty cool.
170 something since its original date. Didn't make it, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. We did a recap of the year and talked about books and trailers and stuff going on, and we got a lot of good feedback on that show. A lot of people were glad to hear Sam, our social media guy. We interviewed him for about 7 or 8 minutes on there and talking about him and what he does and stuff, and a lot of people got to put a voice to a name, which was pretty cool. So what's up with this newsletter, Beam?
Well, this morning the newsletter went out late, but it did go out. The other day, I think it was last night or the night before, we got a notice that they wanted this new authentication process where they know they authenticate your email where it's coming from. But it's not just, well, here's our email. You got to get in there and start messing with your cPanel and give them all, put all these codes in for them. And it was a mess. And they did this like at a last second thing. This morning, we thought we had it all authenticated last night. Go to click, have it sent, scheduled to send. And, well, we can't send it. It's not fully authenticated yet. You still have to do this. Anyway, long story short, went in there and spent most of my morning digging around in there, figured it out. And you should have received your newsletter in your email box. So there you go. Just a minute. So
what are we looking for a book that we've been trying to work on, Beam?
We need short stories. And as I brought up last week, if you attempted to upload your short story to the freshinkgroup.com website, the contest tab, and you weren't able to, we've taken care of that. We had our web designer go in there and fix that. There was a problem with that. And you can upload your short stories there. We are putting them in our next book. You can be a winner and have yours published in there. Now, if you still have any kind of issues, which you shouldn't, but if you do, you can always send those to contest@freshinkgroup.com.
Yep.
And we will get it. So
be sure to do that. Freshinkgroup.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we got a ton of callers lined up. So
all right, well, let's bang through this upfront stuff. Do our roll in, and we'll move on.
All right. So if you want to be one of these callers, you want to join the gaggle of callers on hold tonight, here's how you do that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right.
We've got more books that have come out in the last couple of weeks. The Soul Whisperer's Decision by Gwen M. Plano is out there now. And another book by Gwen M. Plano that we published recently is The Gift, part of the Harbor Point series. Both of those are out right now. And man, Soul Whisperer's Decision is really rocking and rolling. I've been seeing some numbers lately that are like, wow, good for you, Gwen. So we'll see where it lands in our top 25 sellers here in a minute. But what else we got out, Beam?
We have Ran, A Civilization in Hiding by Robert G. Willis-Croft. That is out now, so you can get over there and grab a copy. And go over to the YouTube channel, Fresh Ink Group, and check out the video book trailers for both of these books, the one that Stephen just mentioned and the two that Stephen just mentioned, and this one as well. But Ran, A Civilization in Hiding by Robert G. Willis-Croft is out now.
Yep, and you're going to hear the commercials for those during tonight's show as well, so give it a listen. We've also got Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Towns, which is the sequel to his The Calling Dream. And that's out there now in full sale. Get your copy, and we'll be rolling that commercial during tonight's show. And another one that we'll be rolling during tonight's show is, what does it mean?
American Darkness. These are the dark poetry, dark poems and short stories from the dark mind of Stephen Skibicki. If you were listening a few weeks ago, Mr. Skibicki was on the show. Very interesting guy. Excellent poetry, man. Just fantastic poetry. And SkibickiDarkness.com is his website. Go over there and take a look at it. American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki is out now. And if you want to know about more books and stuff that we've got coming out, we've got a newsletter. And if you're subscribed to it, it came to you late today. But here's how you can subscribe if you're not.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
All right, A Room at the End. This is the one of the books in the Harbor Point series. This is out now, and we have a video for that as well. Plus, in pre-sale in next week, it's pre-sale begins next week, is a Beggar's Bargain, book one of the Bargainers series by Jan Sykes. Say that 10 times fast. Mm. All right, so a Beggar's Bargain, book one in the Bargainers series by Jan Sykes will be available for pre-sale next week. So keep an eye out for that.
We started working on the trailer for that today as well, so hopefully by next week you'll have a new commercial for that. So let's look at our top 25 bestsellers, and we'll race through this list real quick. At 25, Ran, A Civilization in Hiding, The Third Ort Chronicle by Robert G. Willis-Croft. That's The Third Ort Chronicle. There's two other books in that series, and the fourth one, Keed, is about to come out sometime in the next week or two. And 24, we've got The Adventures of Ali Orangutan. It's an illustrated picture book by Larry Landgraf for children. And then The Chair, Volume 4, that's the latest chair book by tonight's guest, Robert McKenzie. Then above that, Sassy Discovers the AME Church, that's an illustrated chapter book for children, and it's the first of two books by B.A. Johnson, starring Sassy. Now the next one, this represents a bit of a drop-off. In slot number 20, I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, David Carroll's Homemade Social Media Blunders, the paperback edition. It's dropped down a little bit, but still out there selling quite briskly. And David got himself into a bit of a bind. He's a newscaster, so he's constantly invited to give speaking engagements in various organizations and things like that. And he takes boxes of books with him and sells lots of books after these things are over. Well, he sold out of his I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, ordered more, couldn't get enough in time, sold out of those. And the man can't keep enough books in his car to sell at those events. So good for you, David.
Yeah.
Above that, we've got How to Paint an American by Andrew McGregor. And then above that, another Ort Chronicle, the first Ort Chronicle, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix by Robert G. Willis-Croft. Above that, Redemption, A Father's Fatal Decision by Gwen M. Plano. That's the most recent book we published by her, except for The Soul Whisperer's Decision and The Gift. And then above that, the Icicle that I just saw was the hardcover edition. Wow, that's pretty good. And then Icicle, A Tensor Matrix paperback edition is next on the list. And above that, the second Ort Chronicle, The Ort Federation to the Stars, also by Robert G. Willis-Croft in the paperback edition. So the Ort Chronicles are out there moving pretty briskly. Above that, Robert McKenzie's The Chair, Volume 2, Faith, Hope, and Love. And then we've got My Three Wishes, Memoir of a Hawaiian Dancer Whose Family Troupe Traveled the World by Kanoi Kei. And then the Sassy Discovers the AME Church hardcover is up there on the list. And here's another one by Robert G. Willis-Croft, The Daedalus Files, Seals, Winged Insertion Command. Now, that book is turning into book two in the Star Child Saga series, which we're publishing in the coming weeks. But that's a pretty cool book. It's got four novellas in it, and you can still go out there and jump on this as a standalone. Above that, Gwen M. Plano's The Soul Whisperer's Decision. Listen to this, Beam, hardcover.
Wow.
Hardcover. Hardcover of a novel in the top 10. Above that, David Carroll's hardcover of Volunteer Bama Dog, which is a look at the South and mannerisms and what of people in the South. Now, we're getting up near the top of the list here. Hardcover edition of Edge of Smoke is up here. Now, this is a long, fairly expensive novel. Pretty good, eh, Beam?
Yeah.
Yep, now we've got Najma Thomas, Dr. Najma Thomas's As We Remember, A History of the Women's Relief Corps in Beaufort, South Carolina. And then above that, look at that, more Willis Croft, Operation Ivy Bells, a Mac McDowell mission. That's book one out of four books so far in his Cold War submarine thriller series starring Mac McDowell. Okay, above that, There Must Be Something in the Water, Anthology of the Fourth Generation, Descendants of Green Pond, After the Emancipation by Abigail Miriam Hamilton Eugenie. And that's the hardcover edition, Beam.
Wow.
It's out there moving pretty well, and it's moving way up the list again. It's easily up in the top 10 here. We are working on a new book by her, which is about the First Ladies of College of South Carolina, is it?
It's the college. It's the South Carolina State College.
That's what it is, South Carolina State College. And following that, she's going to have another book on the First Ladies of Alabama A&M University. So these are cool historical books. All right, that brings us to our top five. And I got to tell you, number four and five are the same book by the same author, Mark Herndon.
Woo-hoo.
The Country Music Hall of Fame drummer who played with the supergroup Alabama for almost three decades. At number five is his paperback edition. At number four is his hardcover edition. This is called The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. It's a fascinating read. It really is. It's about living the life, living the dream, and all the things that can go right, all the things that can go wrong. But if you're a fan of country music, you're a fan of Alabama, you're a fan of Mark Herndon, or you just like good music history, this is a great book for you. Now that brings us to our top three. Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Toms is coming in at the number three slot. That's the paperback edition. So it's been moving up steadily in the last couple of weeks since it's been out. That brings us to our top two. In the number two slot, retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate's Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat, and that's the paperback edition. Now, remember, what we're looking at here is wholesale orders coming from retailers. So Jerry says that he's seen a surge this week in both hardcover and softcover of the sales on places like Amazon. So I expect that number to possibly push him back into number one again next week. But who's at number one? Gwen M. Plano. The Soul Whisperer's Decision.
Mm-hmm.
Paperback edition. Gwen's Soul Whisperer's Decision has been shooting up the charts. And right now it has more than double the sales of number two, Submariner. So it's out there lapping people and really doing a good job. So congratulations, Gwen, Jerry, Carlisle, Mark Herndon, all you people who made the top 25. And those of you who didn't quite make the top 25 but are out there hustling it and doing a good job and getting those books in the hands of people.
Yeah, and the thing about Gwen's book, too, is that hit number one on a couple of categories over at Amazon. That's huge. So congratulations to Gwen M. Plano.
Anytime you can say a number one Amazon bestseller, you've got something.
Indeed. All right, everybody, if you listen to this show and there's something that happens that gets in your way and you're not able to tune in on a given Wednesday evening, or if you just want to replay your favorite episode over and over again, we've got an archive, and here's where you can find all the various places that we park this thing when we're done with them.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
All right. So we are going to go ahead and we're going to introduce tonight because we got a whole bunch of callers on the line. So we're going to bring in David Robert McKenzie.
You want to knock out an ad or two first? Because we got a list of those, too.
Discover interstellar drama with Robert G. Willis Croft's science fiction series, The Oort Chronicles. In the first chronicle, Icicle, a tensor matrix, Braxton Thorpe has discovered a threat to the entire solar system, but he has a problem. He's dead. Frozen at death, he awakens to find himself uploaded into an electronic matrix. Exploring the larger global net, he discovers the Oort, a distributed electronic entity older than humanity.
with an unnerving secret. Aliens wiped out nearly all life on Earth once and are coming back to do it again. The mathematical entity that is Thorpe has to find a way to convince humans of the threat and in time to do something about it. But how? And what? In the second Oort Chronicle, the Oort Federation to the stars, Fraxton Thorpe passes the Federation chairmanship to former U.S. President John Butler. Thorpe's group offers humanity virtual immortality, but Isidore Orlov and his Udachni Enterprises oppose their every move. Phoenix terraforms Mars for more living space, but the Mars Reds prove formidable resistors. In this tense space adventure, Thorpe, his team, and Max the Tabby Cat travel to Proxima Centauri and beyond to the Aster system, 84 light years distant. Will Thorpe bring together humans and Asterians in their quest for intergalactic travel? Will long life prove more than mere humans can handle? In the third Oort Chronicle, Ran, a civilization in hiding. Humans commence a voyage of discovery to the cold spot in the cosmic microwave background. Their first stop is the planet Arcan, orbiting Ran in the constellation Eridanus, where they discover an incipient spacefaring Saurian civilization that has hidden itself from the rest of the galaxy. Arcan has three ruling nations, a fascist dictatorship, a primitive theocracy, and a free market republic. The humans are drawn into a rebellion to overthrow the fascist tyrant and then help thwart the theocratic prophet's ambitions to subjugate Arcan. Told entirely from the Arcan perspective, Ran centers on the human aliens' desire to integrate Arcans into their growing Oort Federation. In the fourth Oort Chronicle, Cade, a lost civilization. Starship Andromeda stops at the Cade Triple Star System on its voyage of discovery and stumbles on a derelict Dyson sphere. The starship is attacked by microbots, scavenging one part of the sphere to repair another. They map the sphere and discover several primitive races inside, humanoid, feline, and Saurian. The explorers discover that the Dyson Sphere's star is about to produce a super flare that could destroy all life and even the sphere itself. The explorers mount a major rescue effort to save the uploads and sapient races. Robert G. Williscroft's series, The Oort Chronicles, is available in jacketed hardcovers, softcovers, and all ebook formats, proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Robert G. Williscroft's The Oort Chronicles!
A grand epic saga by Robert McKenzie, the Chair series spans centuries, touching the lives of 22 generations of related mothers and daughters, their stories witnessed by a simple pine chair. Resolute, strong, loving, and fiercely protective, these women must strive to pass their values to new generations in a world of racism and sexism, politics, scandal, fashion, and even the rise and dominance of baseball. They live in privilege and poverty, with faith and despair, relishing every moment of love, even as they suffer abiding grief. Volume 1, Lightning, Thunder, and Glory, spans the 1600s through World War I, while Volume 2, Faith, Hope, and Love, follows these women's descendants into modern times and beyond. In Volume 3, 7, 8, and 9, the chair flashes back to pre-Civil War America, featuring a woman from the Second Mayflower, her daughter, the black market Irish lace importer, and a Canadian World War I fighter pilot. Volume 4, Punch, Pass, and Kick, jumps forward with a gunboat battle, one courageous cattle drive, a suffragette in the ocean liner industry, a mysterious unpublished manuscript, and more. A blend of history and philosophy told through satire and parody, the story of the chair could be found in some old trunk in any dusty old attic. But McKenzie breathes it alive with riveting tales that span the real and the imagined. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, the Chair series by Robert McKenzie is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions.
All right. So just remember, all these commercials that we're running, we've got actual videos for them too. So get over to the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel and check those out. Well, before we introduce tonight's guest, we got this comment over here on Robert G. Willis-Croft on Twitter. He said he tweeted out, "This tweet is authenticated, I think." So there you go. Yes, it's authenticated. We are seeing it. Thanks a lot, Robert. All right. David Robert McKenzie was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on October 30th, 1955. His family moved to Denver, Colorado in 1956, Los Angeles, California in 1958, Phoenix, Arizona in 1961, back to Denver, Colorado in 1965. I think they were staying one step ahead of the law. Seattle, Washington in 1967, and Houston, Texas in 1968, where he would go on to become sports editor of the school newspaper, the Falcon Focus, at Huffman High School, along with football captain and both senior class and student body president. He graduated from the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA, where he played football for the Bruins with a BA degree in political science in 1978, and later from the University of Houston with an MA degree in public administration and urban planning in 1988. He has traveled to every major city in the United States and many in Europe, including London, Berlin, Paris, Brussels, and Amsterdam, and Bogota in South America. He currently resides in Houston, Texas. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Robert McKenzie.
Hello.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, Stephen. Bean.
All right.
How you doing?
Okay, so we're doing well. Before we get started here, everybody on Twitter, you want to be authenticated? Tweet us and let us know that you're out there. Well authenticated.
Yep.
All right.
Now, you know, Robert, you just heard us play your trailer. That's your new trailer, which covers four books in the Chair series. How many more of these trailers are we going to be making?
Well, I think one more, one and done.
Think so? You think you'll stop after five?
You never know.
You never know.
You get an idea and number six pops up. All right. So how about we go to some of these phone callers? Because now, callers, I have some of your names as they were provided to me, names and phone numbers. Some of them I don't. So the ones that I don't, listen up for the last four digits of your phone number, because I can't use the area codes because there's so many calling from that Houston area, so and other parts of Texas. So the first one we're going to go to, which is right here, we're going to go to Dana in College Station, Texas. How are you doing, Dana? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dana.
Hi, I'm doing good.
All right.
You got a question or a comment? For this scallywag?
First, are you the Dana that's been on this show before?
Yes, I have.
Aha.
All right.
Cool. So what do you got for Robert?
Oh, let's see if he has a question for me.
Okay.
Well, Robert? How was the sunset photograph tonight you always put out on Facebook?
Well, unfortunately, the clouds came in and we didn't have a good sunset today. But I did have a good one yesterday. For you guys in the podcast, I'm kind of known on Facebook for my sunrises and sunsets. I take pictures here. We live out on a 400-acre ranch in Brazos County, and if I get up early enough and I get to see the sunrise, it's a good one. I'll take a picture of it and post it on Facebook. And I see more of the sunsets, so I'm awake and moving around at that time.
I got to check that out. What's the name people search for on Facebook?
It's Dana Patterson Rasko.
Can you spell the last name?
R-A-S-C-O.
R-A-S-C-O. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to look for your sunset pictures.
All right.
And it's Dana with D-A-Y-N-A, and so you'll know everybody in Volume 4, Punt, Pass, and Kick, A Story of Thanksgiving, Fun Family, and Food, and Football. There's a long episode regarding a trail drive, and somehow the fact becomes fantasy and back to reality with the drovers and the cattle heading to Wyoming, having come from South Texas off of the King Ranch through College Station, and they go past Dana and Gearles, her husband, the Oak Hill Ranch, and two of my characters, you have to read the book, drop by and see Dana. So I think you'll enjoy that if you happen to buy Volume 4, along with the other three, and then five, because that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks, Dana. That was nice, the information you had given me around how you actually run a cattle ranch and how you actually live on the ranch and how you do things. So most appreciated.
Yeah. And I'm happy to say we're the fourth generation, or my husband is the fourth generation to be able to live here at this ranch.
Oh, that's cool.
Wow.
You're in South Texas?
I'm sorry, Dana? Where?
College.
South Texas? I don't know where that is in Texas.
Well,
College Station is 90 miles west of Houston.
Okay.
Well, actually, no, it's more north.
Northwest.
Say northwest of Houston.
Yeah.
We're kind of between.
I think I describe exactly where it is under the caption of the photograph you provided.
Yeah, so we're kind of north of Houston, south of Dallas, and east of Austin. So we're what you call kind of central Texas.
Yeah, just west of Hill Country.
That's correct, correct.
All right.
All right, well, thanks for calling in, Dana.
Thanks for calling, Dana. Good to hear from you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Keep us informed when you're putting out your next book, okay?
All righty.
All right.
All right.
Facebook, Dana Roscoe. Ha-ha.
Okay, so the next one we're going to go to, I believe that's the one right there. This one is going to be Pat from St. Louis. How you doing tonight, Pat?
Hey, Pat.
Good, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Yeah.
Welcome
hey,
to
Pat.
The show.
Hey, Robert. You know,
how you doing?
Good. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can hear you.
Oh, okay.
The magic
of
cell phone.
So I just wanted to, I talked to Robert a lot about his books, and I've read all of one, all of two, three quarters of the way through three, and I really want to ask him.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know the answer. But I've never got a definitive answer. How much of this stuff that when you started writing was things that you had been contemplating and thinking about all your life?
Hmm.
And then as you started writing more and were getting through all those things in your mind that you wanted to put down, kind of like work your way through, how many of those things now that you're going into four, maybe five, how many of those things are new ideas that you kind of came upon?
I'll put it this way. That's a good question. The idea of the chair was from a Thanksgiving years ago, and there was an actual extra chair at the table, which you store in the closet or cellar or the attic. But what I had done was I really just thought this up as I went along after I developed the two main characters, Lana and Lurleen. And as I've mentioned before, it's more of a tsunami of unconsciousness, which Stephen has seen in concert. But I just kind of went with what I thought. And my whole thing was to put the whole history of America in it, on one side of it, the facts, the other side, the fiction, and it's hard for the reader to tell which is which because there are some things you're going to think are true that are not, and there's some things that are not you're definitely going to think are true. But when you say these things with a straight face or write them down deliberately, and your intention is felt by the reader, and this is about the reader, although the story itself is a writer's journey, because I've got myself writing about a writer who writes this book, and then this writer creates the chair, not a chair, the chair, and they narrate all three of them through this. So pretty much everything is made up, but I do, as I mentioned with Dana, and there's some Italian family mentioned in volume four that opens up a wine business and olive business in the United States that you might want to read about. But the idea was, as this progresses, major dates, Pearl Harbor, the Kennedy assassination, the Challenger, the start and end of World War One, the start of World War Two, and a lot of the characters are born on those days. And so that kind of slips through if it's not intentional to say, they were born on Pearl Harbor Day, but you just mention the date and the reader might click with that. So the sports,
so
fashion,
these were all events,
aircraft, war. Go ahead.
These are all events that have been in your mind. You're conscious of them. They mean something to you versus other historical events that may or may not. So I guess that's kind of answering my question. I didn't know now if you're kind of going back and searching for events that weren't in your consciousness.
Well,
I
searched and groped for everything I could find as I was sliding through this thing. So when you're sitting there writing, and I wrote it a lot in hand, cursive, but then I converted it to typing so the mind takes over the hand. And I wanted the whole writer's experience just for me in writing these books. And I believe I've done that, and whatever happens, whether it cracks the Fresh Ink Group top five one day or falls off the charts into the sea like Icarus, I hope that people, when they do read it, they understand that it's written for them and that I did my very best.
Well, Kathy Ireland likes them.
That's it. That's all. After that, it was everything was cream. Cherry on top. Everything was a plus.
Yeah.
So how much research would you have to go back? Do you do any research to verify things, or is it just kind of like, this is what interests me, I know these facts, and the rest of it is the conversation?
Everything that's real, I researched as best I could to make sure I wasn't incorrect, but I also made up events that would parallel various real-world events, but they're not real-world events, but they're expressed as such. One example is a war in Africa that never occurred, but to find out which one that is, you're going to have to read all five volumes.
Well, I know for sure.
Good selling point.
I know for sure you had the dates right of a doubleheader in 1965 between the Dodgers and the Cardinals. So I know you went back and
there
looked at that.
All right. Somebody might not believe that's true.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that too, because that's true with a lot of historical novels, is if you get a little tiny details wrong, it just throws people right out of the story.
Yeah.
Right. And if you take a look at writers like Shara, everything's factual. The only thing that's not factual would be the thoughts and the conversations that is happening with the major characters. The minor characters are all fictional, but that's what I was trying to get with Robert, what he was using. So. Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Pat.
I'll talk
thanks
to you guys
for calling,
later,
Pat.
Right? Okay, bye.
All right. So we're getting the next one here. Make sure I got the right one.
This is going to be Scott from Huffman, Texas. How you doing tonight, Scott?
Hey, Scott.
I couldn't be better, gentlemen. How
All
are you?
All right. Well, welcome to the
hey,
show.
Scott.
Good. Good. Thank you for first-time caller. The previous gentleman kind of took my thunder. We'll see if we can maybe get a little more on this. But, you know, with the size of this epic saga, the question just becomes, and if it is the same, I'll throw in another question. But, you know, what actually is the inspiration for this? It is obviously a big undertaking. So just what was the inspiration to keep going?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is my youngest brother, Scott.
Oh, hey, Scott.
Right.
He's a ringer and having called in. I'm surprised he actually did.
The
but
younger, better looking
question,
one?
not really. But my my mother always challenged me to write a book from elementary school.
Hmm.
And I started one, and I won't give it away, but I've had this manuscript handwritten 50, 60 pages on three whole note paper from 1970. And I've carried it around me forever thinking, oh, I'll turn this into a book. Well, I if you read the books, you'll find out what this is. But essentially, I thought, well, I never got to write a book. I should have written a book, coulda, shoulda, woulda. And then my mom got to look at volumes 1 and 2. She passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I did that, and I know that she was. I know that she was happy to see that that I had done that.
Yeah.
So as far as inspiration, you just decide to do something and you keep going. I thought of all the thing. In fact, people are, oh, this thing's too long. What are you talking about? Rambling everywhere. But I'll tell everyone who's listening, I cut out 200 pages of this thing.
Wow.
That I'm thinking, even I don't understand it. But if somebody else would, then that would really be taking it to the next level. If you write something you don't understand, but somebody says, oh, yeah, I understand that. I feel that exactly. But I thought that was too much of a reach, even for me.
Yeah.
But that's why you do. You decide. Gary and Beam are writers. They know you think these things up, and you just have to put the pencil to the pad and sit down there and type. And whether there's a routine, I don't know. I got up at 3 a.m. generally, worked till dawn, but there's no preset routine on ideas if you decide to put something down.
Yeah.
So how's it going,
okay.
Scott? How's Sam?
It's going great.
Texas? His son just started University of Texas.
Ooh,
which is
cool.
In Austin.
Great. Yeah, he's doing great. He really finding his way nicely and enjoying it up there, you know, away from home. First time out.
Cool.
Book him.
Book
still
him.
Bring it.
You know,
just real quick,
it was interesting, your first caller. I she used to live across the street from us. I haven't heard from her or seen her in 40 years. That was pretty cool. So if you're still on, how you doing?
Yeah. Dana wouldn't be still on, though.
Okay, just let me
know.
She'll listen
yeah,
to it later on the podcast.
Yeah, that,
hey,
was, that was
interesting. YouTube.
And look her up on Facebook, Dana Roscoe.
All right, well, thanks for the answer. All the best.
All right, Scott, love you. Thanks for calling in, man.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye, man. Take it easy.
All right,
bye.
All right. So we are going to the next
one. The whole
one
idea
here.
To fill up a show is to get family and friends to call in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next one here is going to be, let me make sure I get these numbers right. This is going to be Sharon from Scottsdale, Arizona. Welcome to the show. Sharon, how you doing tonight?
Hi, Sharon.
Great. Hi guys. How you doing?
All right.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Sharon. Sharon,
hey,
formerly
Robert.
From Baltimore.
Balmer.
Well, yeah, actually, technically
Bethesda.
Annapolis, but Baltimore
Annapolis.
Was close yet far away. So,
closest NFL
area.
Team.
Pardon me?
The closest
NFL team. Or maybe Washington. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Washington. And we're kind of in between. So you could go Ravens or you could go, what are they now? I mean, are they still the Skins or is that inappropriate?
They're
going to
bring it back. People want the Redskins back.
Good.
Yeah.
Don't rule it out.
All right.
All those guys who won Super Bowls, they think, well, we want it as the Redskins, and these new names have done nothing. You'll attend a Redskins reunion rather than a Commanders or the football team of Washington.
Right. Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you called, Sherry. What's going on?
Well, good to hear. Well, not a lot. But, you know, I do enjoy our exchanges on Twitter a lot. It's amazing what you can cram into one tweet one X, I should say. So those are always very enjoyable. And I'm wondering, have you had any lovely salmon lately in your life?
Oh,
I did. I posted, I had some photos from the Russian camera the other night that was in the 80s. I posted on there were some salmon remnants found on a blue.
Yes.
Planet with the sun, the golden sun
in
the upper right. And it was
these
salmon remnants were found in a cloud, kind of a cirrus cloud, but still a cloud. So there's proof of life on Venus.
Well,
there
you go.
There are salmon.
Well,
and what else?
You know,
Sal is going on here. The great Sal, the salmon of Twitter.
Exactly.
Trademark. But hashtag Sal, check him out.
Exactly. Now,
Sharon's
favorite
creation.
Right. Now, are you going to get extraterrestrial in any of your volumes? And when you're done with volume 5, are you planning another series, another historical fiction series? Or do you think you want to take a break and then... You know, maybe go short form like haiku or, of course, I don't think you do haiku very well. I mean, you would, but you tend to, you know, have a few more syllables.
I don't have the five-word
yeah.
ending. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind
exactly.
of short, kind of the brevity.
Part
of this is the chair went to Mars in volumes 1 and 2. And so that's extraterrestrial. And then, I guess if you read 3, 4, and 5, you'll meet some other people. I'm not a science fiction writer. I get it. Martians, Venusians, scary people from galaxies is just probably not my strength. I don't know that I have any strengths, but I'm not H.G. Wells or Jules Verne. Although you can liken this, the chair, to the time machine.
Ooh,
sometimes
exactly.
I would sit around and think, I drive to downtown Houston, or you drive to these cities or fly to these cities and see them over the years, and I felt like Rod Taylor in a time machine.
Exactly.
And, you
kind of
look
like Rod Taylor.
Well, thank you. But
you're welcome.
I hope. But he's Australian, so nobody knows that. I think he's English.
I know.
But
knew he was
I
Australian.
I love that movie,
I
though.
Love that.
That movie and the book and the ending and the writing is just extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's prophetic. And, you know, I hope 100 years somebody finds my books in a dusty old attic in an oaken chest and go, what is this, before the papers crumple in their hands. So,
well, it'll be
people
got to
get on the chair and, you know, and they have it on e-books. People, you know, I can't buy these books, but you can get them on e-book and you even sample them. So
perfect.
It's The Art of Self-Promotion, P.T. Barnum. You got to pull that once in a while. That's not my shtick either, although
I am
narcissistic to begin with. So you have to be to write a book. I don't care what anybody says. You have to.
Well,
you have to convince yourself that you can write it, you can complete it, and whether it sells or not, you know, it's like a lost symphony of Beethoven or something, or Bill Shavanosky in, you know, Joliet, Illinois, who, you know, wrote together a flute concerto that he always wanted to do and nobody heard it. You know, if you write a book and nobody read it, is the Pope Catholic?
Exactly, the Pope Catholic, right. Do the pages flutter? You hear the pages fluttering.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate.
So thanks for buying the chair series, Sharon.
Oh, you're
I know
welcome.
You've posted photos, and I try to keep a picture of everybody who does, and I'll probably do some freaky GIF of like 10,000. Well, it would be nice though if it sold 10,000 copies, but probably it's more like 100. So you know, you get into triple digits in this business, you're a playa.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what that means? All right.
You can mean anything you want when I write about it.
Well, Bobby Mack, you're a doll. Love your work. Love your tweets. You're just a great guy all around, and we're glad to have you in this hemisphere. So thank you very much for what you do and how you entertain so many of us and fill so much in our lives with your words. So thank you for that.
Thanks for calling
in,
Sharon.
Thank you, Sharon.
Yeah.
Thanks,
you're welcome,
Sharon.
Guys. You have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Okay, now we're going to step away here and run a couple of commercials, but we are talking with Robert McKenzie and you can
Bobby
talk
Mack.
To him too. Bobby Mack, 516-453-9902. All right.
Trademark it.
In the Pruitt-Igoe slums of St. Louis in the 1960s, a heroin addict mother breaks her son's dolls and screams, "You are not a girl." However, no one can convince Stephanie to live as Stephen. Her mother pimps her out to a man who rapes and takes pictures of her. After finding her mother brutally murdered, she is placed in Christian foster care, where they also try to convince her to accept being male. Her mother's lover is sentenced to life in prison for the murder. Author of widely praised The Calling Dream, Carlisle Toms brings back famed televangelist Pastor Ronald Dennison in this unflinching sequel, Edge of Smoke. Dennison sets up a trust that allows a compassionate old neighbor to adopt Stephanie out of foster care. Still, she is violently bullied at school for identifying as female. The trust pays for transition surgery at 18, and she begins to live fully as a woman. Frightened by men, she remains a virgin until she falls in love with Jordan. But she runs into the man who abused her and remembers her childhood pledge to kill him. Will her lust for murdering the man who brutalized her as a child cause her to lose the man she loves? Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, The Calling Dream, and now, Edge of Smoke, can be found anywhere and shipped everywhere in jacketed hardcover and softcover editions, or downloaded in all ebook formats. Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Toms.
Sarah Jameson, a nurse at County Central Hospital, survives an accident that kills her two young children. While comatose, she travels into the heavenly realm where she visits with her precious little ones. She is given a choice, return to her husband, Jack, or remain with her children in their celestial home. Jack was not in the fated automobile. Though he heard the crash and ran to help, there was nothing he could do. He suffers the loss of his children, fears the potential demise of his wife, and wonders about his own sanity. His struggle with PTSD from his military years has returned, and at times, he cannot distinguish between the present and the past. An accident tragically changed the lives of this young family, but out of sorrow emerges unexpected blessings. You'll be deeply moved by Gwen M. Plano's new novel, The Soul Whisperer's Decision. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. The Soul Whisperer's Decision by Gwen M. Plano.
All right, there's the trailer for that. A book trailer.
Yeah.
And for the previous one, too, for Edge of Smoke. So get over to YouTube and type in Fresh Ink Group, and you shall see a lot of really cool book trailers and archived episodes of this show. So get over there.
Subscribe while you're there. Subscribe.
Subscribe and like. Hit those like buttons. We are now going to go back to the phone lines. And this one here is Colin from Kingwood, Texas. Welcome to the show, Colin. How you doing tonight?
Hey, Colin.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going well.
Hey, Colin. How's it going,
Hello.
Man?
It's going well, Robert.
How's the new job? Colin just graduated Texas A&M and started as an engineer for a global consulting firm. They have offices around the world, but Colin is working here in Houston, so that's great.
Cool.
Yeah, it's going smooth so far.
That's
a good day today.
Nice.
So do you have a question for Robert or a comment or a threat or whatever it is you're into?
Yeah, sure. So Robert knows I'm not a stalker, so I'll give him a question that's easy for me to ask but could be hard for him to answer. And it's a basic question. I'm surprised it hasn't been asked, but what's your favorite Chair novel that you've written?
Ooh.
Which volume?
I'm going to that's an excellent question because I'll be honest with you. Of what I've written, I've completed all five. And Stephen Gary and Beam, they have the volume five. I got one or two tweaks, but we'll go on that. But I'll be honest with you. I like volume three for pure writing because it followed up 3 years later from the one and two, which was essentially one book. So they had to divide it in two for the page count. It was like Michener's Texas, you know, over 1,000 pages, which I have here on my shelf. I think Michener's one of the great authors of all time. If you've not read James Michener, you're missing out. So the idea of volume three was, I have at the beginning of it some clarification of what happened in one and two, because those that I know read one and two, the few that there are, although the few are now the many, they have questions, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to parody and tongue-in-cheek what they've already read to a certain extent on one side, and then on the flip side, I'm going to have the chair, who speaks in italics, is written in italics, tell the reader flat out what just happened. And the chair does that essentially in one or two paragraphs. And then I have my author's note, which I begin and I kind of flash back to volumes one and two. And then I introduce what's about to happen in three. And there are only three chapters in volume three. And there are three stories. There's the first Lorelei. There's a guy named Irwin, who is a Canadian World War One pilot. And I had jumped on the World War One thing in volume one with John, one of the characters, and Yves, the French Yves, the jockey, Yves. And I decided, well, let's take a different angle and use the Royal Air Force and what they went through. And people don't know this, but they recruited a lot of Canadians and Australians to be in the RAF. So this is about a Canadian guy, Irwin Summersby, who goes to England, takes on this accent, and they love him over there. And he's climbing his way to the top of command, and in battling the Germans, he encounters the Red Baron, and the Red Baron talks of him. And so it's historical. I think it's the best mix of historical fiction because I had time to reflect on one and two. So if you read any of these, and I hope you read some of them, volume three, I really like the feel I had in it. And it had kind of a ground game feeling in that I clarified some things, and it just kept moving forward. So I love them all.
Nice.
I felt really good about volume three, which has a lot of obscurity in it. And the reader, if they do read it, and don't skip pages, if they do read it, they'll figure out what's going on.
Can people
that's the challenge.
Can people start with volume three, Robert? Can they start with volume three?
Yes, they can.
Check it out.
Yes, because the start of Volume 3 summarizes, to an extent, what has just been done in the first two volumes.
Okay, good.
Because that's why I did that. That's a good point, Stephen.
Good, yeah.
Okay, another real quick question. Do you intentionally bring back some of those storytelling techniques in your later volumes, or do you kind of start from scratch?
No, when you say techniques, the whole thing is a parody and a satire on one side, but on the other side, it is dead-on history. So as you go through the timeline, and I originally thought, well, this will just be a story about a mother and daughter. Well, as I mentioned before, a couple of these podcasts with Stephen and Bean, it kind of just took off, and I just couldn't stop. And I decided, well, let's just put in the whole history of the United States. That'll be easy. And so by the end of Volume 3, which I just told you about, I said, well, forget that. I'm taking this out to the complete history of the world. And then in Volume 5,
yeah,
you can maybe deduce where this thing's headed. But I didn't pull any punches, and I felt good about the whole project. And I want to thank Stephen and Beam for working on these things and publishing my The Chair. And means a lot. And people calling in and people reading the books, no matter how many it is or how few it is, if somebody has something to say about it, as long as you spell my name right. I don't care what you say about me.
All right, guys. Well, I've taken enough of your time.
Yeah, thanks
for
calling.
Detailed answers, Robert.
Okay, Colin, we'll see you at Eschenbach with Bruckner later this month.
All right.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Looking forward to it, man. Yeah.
All right.
Colin,
thanks for calling.
He's a classic pianist. He's a very good piano player.
All right. Okay, we're going to go to this one. Let's make sure we got the right number here. We do. This one is, we're going to John in Houston. How you doing tonight, John in Houston?
Hey, I'm doing great. Hey, Robert, how are you?
Hey, John.
John, how's it going?
Hey, it's going great. Hey, I want to ask, you know, with all the success of, like, the Barbie movie, not to compare your epic to Barbie per se, but it's the year of the woman or female oriented movie, etc. When could we expect a script and a movie of The Chair, or of one of the volumes of The Chair, I should say?
Well, I've already been in talks with Hollywood about the potential, the Coen brothers, Scorsese, and some others that have not called me back.
Yeah.
No, I've talked with them. If I'm talking, that means I'm still in talks with them. But that would be nice. I did a trailer in 2019 before I even finished it. It's on YouTube, and it's the beginning credits, and then the end credits of how this thing would be and who would be some of the actors and actresses.
I remember that trailer.
Did you say actress in the year of the woman? I just did. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that, somebody will pick up on it one day.
Yeah.
For God's sakes, they made a Barbie movie.
Yeah, for goodness sakes, yeah. I mean, maybe it's Quentin Tarantino or someone like that. Maybe it's someone else.
It'll be like Michael Douglas pushing Cuckoo's Nest. You know, that took forever.
Yeah.
So you never know.
Forget Barbie.
Yeah,
bring back Barbarella.
Kevin Costner had his
yeah,
had
Barbarella.
His epic, right? Yeah.
A CGI Jane Fonda.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about the Elko hire? He's going on a different topic, but he's from New Jersey, but I think he went to Penn. He's an Ivy Leaguer. He just seems like a smart guy.
He is.
So he's
Woods, proof's in the pudding. These guys win. They get their players, NIL, but, yeah. I think A&M's on the way up.
I think
John's an
Aggie,
just in case. We went to a couple games years ago.
Sure.
He's the most optimistic Aggie fan I've ever heard. So if you need a positive thought and a consultation,
talk to
John.
Don't you have to be optimistic to be an Aggie fan?
Apparently you do. Apparently you do. So it's all good
fun, right?
Steven
went to Michigan, so he's going to let you have it.
Yeah, this is the year I get to strut around Alabama wearing my Michigan shirts everywhere I go.
How about that?
That's great.
Yeah. Well, end of an era with Harbaugh.
Steven just became a Charger fan also.
Oh, okay, okay.
There's a news flash.
Yeah.
All right.
So who do you got
in
the Super Bowl? You got the Chiefs? You got the Chiefs? Or who do you got? What's everyone
I'm
got?
I'm
going to
pick the Chiefs. I think a neutral site, indoors. They're going to have to stop Kelce. But the rules are in the NFL, you can't hit these guys 5 yards down the field. And although the 49ers have outstanding, they could win the game very easily. But I think the difference will be Mahomes getting to his multiplicity of receivers of all types, running backs and wide receivers, and then Kelce. I mean, you got to give the guy credit. I'm not a Chiefs fan, but Andy Reid, they run plays that you can't cover.
Yep, he's a good pointer regardless.
Now you've got teenage girls all over social media asking, which team does Taylor Swift play on?
Yeah, I've been hashtagging Taylor Swift, though, in my tweets about the chair. So,
good idea.
That'll light up. And I hashtag Tom Brady. I'll hashtag Shaq. Hashtag Joe Biden, who's ever into that. You know,
you're going to have to do a Jim Harbaugh.
Put out the names.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Shaq's quite the businessman.
Probably
you
I should
know.
Hashtag Robert Willis-Croft.
Yeah.
Based on his success with Fresh Ink Group. Go with the winning team.
Put the G in there, Robert G. Willis-Croft.
Yeah, Robert G.
In
yeah.
All right.
John, thanks for calling in.
Awesome.
Yeah. Glad you called, John. Look forward to seeing
you
soon.
Yeah, take care. Yeah, talk to you soon. Yeah, we'll have to connect. Take care.
Bye.
Have a good evening.
All right, so we got a couple more callers here. This one
then
here.
Then we've got some roll-ins from Robert, too, so keep it moving.
This roll one here is Dickie from Humble, Texas. How you doing tonight, Dickie?
Hey, Dickie.
Hey.
Hey, man. Thanks for holding.
It's been a while, man. You had some callers.
Yeah, we got them stacked up.
Kind of set these things up and threaten people that you haven't seen in a while.
It's amazing.
It's good to hear your voice.
$100 Amazon gift cards will do, huh?
That's right.
I'll take mine.
Yeah.
I'll call twice if I get two.
Yeah.
You're on now. Do you have a question for Robert?
Yeah.
What to do?
That's a broad question.
What did he say?
What's new?
We grew up together. I'm in the book.
What's new? Nothing's new. I'm 68 years old. Everything's old.
Boy, some of those things
Dickie,
we did, though, seem like
older
yesterday, don't they? Oh, I'm sitting here looking at the original chair right now.
Yeah, the Thanksgiving was at Dickie's, and that's where they had his daughter moving the chair back and forth. And when I thought, well, maybe she could leave that chair at the table, but I didn't want to ask. So I asked his mother about the chair, and she told me it was everywhere. Germany, El Paso, Colorado, all these places.
Wow.
So that's what I thought when I went home that night.
So
well,
you
I
were inspired
write a
by a
story
real chair.
About a mother and daughter who gives a chair down the generations, an heirloom.
You're going to have to get your hands on that chair because the Smithsonian's going to want it.
Yeah.
But I got to put that for you.
If you read the books, you might learn something about that whole auctioneering of fine furniture over the years.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So what's new, Dickie? What are you doing out there? Who you got in the football game? Can we say Super Bowl?
Probably.
Unfortunately, of course, the Texans aren't in. But we're going with the Chiefs. Because of Mahomes being a Texas boy.
There you go.
There you go.
And his dad is an excellent driver. He was like Rangers great. Pat Mahomes, the dad. So he's going to be a lot of fun in that suite this weekend with all the beer and liquor and all of that. So God bless him. Good luck.
Yeah.
Well, they should enjoy it. It doesn't happen very often, but they're very fortunate. And how many times has happened to them in the last 5 years?
Yeah, well, you have the best quarterback. You got a chance to win it all every year.
Well, hopefully we
maybe
got ours coming up.
Yeah, well, it looks like Stroud's a real deal, and let's see if they don't muck that up somehow. But you wish them the best. They had a great year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hopefully next year will be better.
Right.
We did better than the Cowboys.
Yeah.
That's all that matters. Once
That's
Dallas
right.
loses
we
in
the
playoffs,
the
I'm
Cowboys
happy
did.
No matter what happens.
I had to bring out my cup that my daughter made me from the very first game. It's a big white cup, and it's got the Texans logo, and then it's got the score and the date of the Dallas game.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
cool.
That's still a prized possession.
Yeah, I was at that. That's when they blew off fireworks at the half with the roof closed, and the whole third quarter was smoky. And when it looked like the Texans were going to win, Jerry Jones came down right in front of us and started screaming at the Cowboys. It was tremendous. They'll never have a bigger win than that.
Hmm.
Now, that long pass, at the beginning, I come out of my chair just thinking the Lord has done us right.
Praise be to God.
Not
Amen.
That football is important.
Yeah.
Well, it
yeah.
is the sum of it.
Yeah, you're talking to a guy from Michigan now, so yeah, football's important.
Yeah, we won't hold that Michigan part against you.
Yeah, I hear that. So, Dickie, we're glad you called in, and we'd like to invite you to call in on future shows, too, even if it's not Robert sitting here in the chair.
Yeah.
Oh, we can do that. We can do that.
Every Wednesday evening.
Every Wednesday evening. We have some characters for guests, that's for sure.
Thanks
well,
for calling, man.
Done
love
a lot
you.
Of good, things.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Dickie.
Thanks for calling.
All right, man. We'll talk to you later, Rob.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, quickly, I've got a couple episodes in there that are tangential to the plot in these volumes, and they involve a few things, very, very obtuse but abstract. But Dickie and I went to Mexico, and I kind of weave that into the Spanish conquistadors, and then I've got California. When I was out at UCLA, he would come out sometimes. He worked for Continental Airlines, and we went to a music store that had the big speakers, these Bose, you know, all the Harman Jardin or whatever these names are, and they always had these VIP rooms with shag carpets, and this one guy was trying to sell us some speakers. And he put on an ELP, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, and he turned them up to volume 10, and the place started shaking. And so we opened the slide door and left the VIP room, and the speakers started on fire. So we're running
wow.
across the street, and this guy, get this, the guy comes out of the store screaming at us, I just want to sell you something else. It was crazy, but that's he's a good friend of mine. We've done a lot of road trips, and there's a lot of Leroy and Merle associated with my ideas for those road show things with buddy movies and all those things. So he's my high school quarterback. He's the best.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. And that's not the first time Keith Emerson has set speakers on fire either.
I mean, it was lucky man, you know, at the end of here. He set off World War III with a siren. People headed for a shelter.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was improv in the studio when they did that.
Wow. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was in fact, the entire song wasn't supposed to be on the album, but they came up so short on the length of the music for the album. They said,
and that's my favorite song by them.
Yeah. The producer said, "You got anything else?" And Greg said, "I got lucky, man. He wrote it when he was 12 years old." So they started laying down the tracks. Keith Emerson fired up the Moog synthesizer and improv that ending.
My goodness. Yeah, yeah.
All right, Beam, we got another caller?
Yeah, I'm going to hit a tweet here first. Verwayne Greenhoe, here's some news for you, Robert.
He says, I've bought all of the available stories in the series so far, but they are on my TBR, to be read list. So you've got books that have been sold right there to Verwijn, and as soon as book five comes out, I'm guessing Verwijn's going to grab that one too. So,
yeah.
All right.
Mr. Greenho, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
One podcast doubled your sales.
There you go.
And he's all a good writer, too. He knows
things. Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Yes, he is. And now this next caller here, I don't have a name for this one, so I'm going to just give the last four digits of your phone number, that 6631. 6631, what's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm Connie Clark, and I'm calling from Bernie, Texas, north of San Antonio.
To the show, Connie. Welcome to the
Hi,
show.
Connie.
Connie, hey, how you doing?
Well, I'm good, Robert. I know you've texted
totally
me enough
exciting.
Time, so here I am.
Well,
did you get an Amazon gift
Connie
card?
Connie got me interested in writing many years ago. They didn't start writing. We used to work together at Price Waterhouse, and she gave me a book by James Lee Burke, the detective writer, Robichaud. There was a character. Tommy Lee Jones played him in that movie with Levon Helm.
Based in Louisiana.
Yes, and Connie runs a newspaper and does all kind of things over there. She's always at a ribbon cutting. She's like a celeb. They don't open anything without Connie using the big scissors. So she posts Connie Clark. She's on Facebook. Follow her, like whatever. But very good. So how you doing?
Well, I'm doing good. I'm mostly a networking queen. I belong to two chambers. I have my business is Connie Can Write. I do copywriting and proofreading and editing magazines and all of that good stuff. So, yeah, I belong to business associations and just do whatever I can to get out there. And it's my second career after leaving IBM. So I love it. It's what I really enjoy doing. So it's great for me.
That is great. I'm glad you got that going on. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I just wish that James Lee Burke had some new books out. His daughter is writing quite a bit, so I do have read all her books too.
I see. Yeah. I didn't know that. I'll have to check it out.
Yep.
Very good. I read that Across the Atlantic once, one of his books.
Yeah.
And that's when I thought, I could write a long book and bug people, but he's one of the best.
Yeah, I can't believe that Robert's done. He's written all those volumes. That's something as a writer. I have never wanted to write a full novel. I just don't have it in me. But anyway, it's great he's doing that. I'm an avid reader, so I love murder mysteries is my favorite. But anyway, I have almost all of his volumes, and I appreciate him contacting me. Yeah, Robert was a good bud at Price Waterhouse.
Cool.
You were the best. Thank you.
Did a lot of marketing things together.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyway,
Connie,
all
thanks
about
for
me.
Calling.
Glad...
Do you have a question about the books, or are you
well,
confused
I don't have a question,
and your mind blown
I've been
from having read that text? Put you in a hypnotic spin forever where you can't ever read again.
Well, it's on my the third volume is on my to be read list. I belong to four book groups, so I'm usually pretty busy reading a lot. But it's on my shelf. I'll get to it.
Spread the word. Have them call in the show even.
Yeah.
These guys will promote various writers. They'll promote you if you write a novelette or whatever it's called, a novella.
Oh, goodness.
I don't know.
I'm good.
Too
I'll
short
be good
for
if
me,
I write
guess.
A blog. If I write a blog for my
brief.
Website, that'd be good enough.
Breaking news, you know.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, good talking to you, Robert.
Okay, Connie. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling, Connie.
Great to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Connie. Now, Robert, you've got some roll-ins here, some things about your book for us to share with people. You want to tell us about those?
Well, I discussed this with Beam. I decided, well, let me do a snippet or just a couple of paragraphs from each book to give the listeners a feel for, you know, some of these things. And there's no real rhyme or reason why I chose them except for the fact that The first one is the chair speaking, and the chair speaks awkwardly because it doesn't use the words a, and the. So it's just kind of a quirk I put in because it's a chair and it's not supposed to talk like a real person, although I think it is. But I decided to use AI, and you can use all these different voices of people. So I put in the text from the books, I cut and pasted, and then I put it into this AI software that you can get a nominal amount on, like $1 a month or something, because then you can use the longer text. But so that's what I did. If there's a number of these pieces, and I hope people find them interesting, if you still have them. So.
Yeah, we are going to play. We're going to try to get through as many as we can. We're down to 15 minutes, but this is going to be from Volume 1.
Excerpt from The Chair
the
by
chair.
Robert McKenzie, Volume 1, Lightning, Thunder, and Glory, Chapter 1, John. The Chair begins. I remember hearing chime sound off 1, 2, 3, 4 times. It was loud that afternoon. Door opened. He was here. It pretty ring off in distance down hallway. Have lots of rooms. She carry him upstairs. They had room for him. 4 stairways on 3 floors, attic, cellar, porch. Cellar was cold. Furnace was hot. Sometimes I got next to it, in wintertime. Oh, cellar. They would bring bottles of wine, fruit, vegetables. Always ice in summertime. This was all around time I remember first seeing John. They would one day name street, bridge, school, rocket site after him. When I come down hallway, I saw people on walls and squares, people who lived in house, some who did not. I knew most of them. They sometimes changed on those walls. More would show up there. Long trip, it seemed, to top of stairs, doorways in hall, some open, some not. There was red, green, blue, yellow, orange piece glass window at one end, hallway, big window at other end where I would sit, look outside. John Allen Cooper was born earlier at start of new day, June 21st, 1893, after midnight warm starry night here in New Rumley, Ohio. Now late afternoon he was home. Window white wooden frame opened little locks. Open, close. Any time of year, big blooming green leaf trees, summer bright yellow, orange brown trees, fall leaves, snow, no leaves. Icy, icy street front house going downhill. Bricks in road, when leaves gone cold always. I see from window. Bell ring downstairs, children at door, John's friends. I saw them walking up steps. Colored glass window swing open with latch to cool wind breeze. Others come too. Salesman once in a while. I don't recall anyone buying anything from salesman at door. There was porch sunroom, only got sun morning flowers. When I downstairs, there were people sitting talking. They talk long time. Go right by me, sit with me, sit down, sit by me, chime sound, 12 times middle of day. When John Little, he eat then, at table kitchen with black yellow checkerboard tile floor. Radio years later, some people would listen to, man speak about New York, Paris, Hollywood, Florida, Germany, England, London, Japan, China, Janice's cabinet. I know that. I recall all of this. I do not always know order it all happened, but I was there for all of it.
All right. So
yeah.
That's an AI voice, huh?
Yep. They got hundreds you can choose from to get a certain tone, and if you play a couple more, you'll see that.
Yeah, all right. So the next one is going to be from Volume 2 of The Chair.
Excerpt from The Chair by Robert McKenzie, Volume 2, Faith, Hope, and Live, Chapter 13, Yves Ive Vadim. Saint-Jacques, late on the night of October 15th, 1918, in the middle of a steady, chilly rain, in a dense, foggy battlefield ringed with barbed wire, stumbled and fell into a trench filled with water and dead soldiers as vile smoke blew from the east all along the front. His horse had been killed a few hundred yards away when he came upon the battle, having ridden all night, trying to find his way back to Nice. But he was nowhere near Nice, and later did not remember saying this. Walking dazed and confused, delirious, in circles for a couple of hours, Eve fell down next to American Army Captain John Allen Cooper, originally from New Rumley, Ohio, near Cleveland. Captain Cooper, West Point class of 1915, was commanding now a troop which had been separated from his company, having gotten lost after a shelling by the Germans 2 days before. Eve was born September 24, 1896, to Olivier Henri Saint-Jacques, a chapeau manufacturer, and Audrey LaChapelle, the noted operatic soprano and stage actress, who toured the world with many great symphonies and famous acts of the day. But he was not a soldier, not a Valkyrie, not a painter, not a carpenter, not a mathematician, and not a hired gun. Instead, he was a jockey from Paris.
A jockey from Paris.
Wow.
Yeah, these are pretty interesting, the voices here. They got that, how they were able to do that inflection on it.
Yeah, it's, and you know it's only going to get better, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I've dabbled with a few of those voice ones. So, I mean, it's just, and this was a while ago, so these are already, you know, come a long way in just a short period of time. All right, we're going to do volume three next. And
I like volume three, folks, if you're still listening.
Okay. This is the middle partition, volume three. All right, volume three of The Chair.
Excerpt from The Chair by Robert McKenzie, volume 3, 7, 8, and 9. Leanne, Lana, Lurleen, and Lauren at midday on the Saturday before Thanksgiving in 1971. As later that early evening, Lurleen would leave her daughter Lauren with her mother and grandmother to fly to London on a Boeing CVC-10 for a quick rendezvous with Rod Stewart at the Savoy Hotel. Before returning on Wednesday, Lurleen having Stewart in tow on the return trip, are up in the unfinished attic with wall studs and ceiling rafters, exposed and floor joists covered with pine planks and pull-chain bare light bulbs on opposite sides of the dusty space, looking around for some old family history papers and photographs, amongst obscure paintings by unknown artists covered in wrinkled canvas cloth, family ancient relics in crates, shadeless broken lamps, worn-out unstylish furniture no longer en vogue, old toys and games, strings of Christmas lights and ornaments discarded, and junk strewn all across around every which way, lit by rays of autumn sunlight falling on all four of them. A pattern of light and shade dropping on the wooden planked floor through the small nine-paned recessed roof, angled caulked window, through which shafts of dust-filled light shined diagonally down into the dim gray, tan-brown, and flax vanilla colors of the rarely visited room atop the house, which Lana would visit alone sometimes throughout the year, but rarely in the summer, to get a sense of longing, dreaming, and escape. All are present this Saturday afternoon, having gathered for the 1971 Thanksgiving dinner and family get-together at Lana's home in Los Angeles in Beverly Hills. Usually, for the past few years, these women to celebrate Thanksgiving would assemble to cook the turkey and all the trimmings, or as Leanne would say, fixins, make jello-o molds, boil potatoes, fricassee autumn vegetables, grate cheese, slice carrots, prepare and stir gravy, mush both oyster and cornbread stuffings, concoct casseroles, and bake rolls and pies, and go through old wooden chests, leather trunks, mirrored dresser drawers, cardboard boxes, and tall armoires with old dresses in the attic.
All right, that's volume three. That's it's cool the way you've got each of these with different voices, Robert. That's that adds to the mystique.
Yeah.
Now we got time to do one more, and we're going to make this the Black Sabbath one. This is Vol 4.
Hmm.
I really like the guy in Vol 4.
All right. This Ozzy?
No.
All right. Here we go. The Chair, Volume 4, by Robert McKenzie.
Excerpt from The Chair by Robert McKenzie, Volume 4, Punt, Pass, and Kick. Dismounting their horses, Furio and Ignis, Jasper, and Lon, after handing the reins to Boom, then looking both ways, left then right, then left again, jog across the road. It begins to rain lightly. The band plays and marches on north, soon to be picked up just a ways further down the road in at least 10 or so luxurious air-conditioned buses and returned safely to campus. As law enforcement officials park on the shoulder of the road ready to direct traffic, of which there is very little, and the herd and its cowboys wade into the land owned by the Coca-Cola Company to bed down for the night. Dana and Gerl, wearing their sweat-lined straw, Larry Mahan hats, muddy Lacaze boots, faded indigo Wrangler boot, cut jeans, and pressed untucked pearl snap button. Close flap-pocketed rock mount shirts, Dana's blue and Gerald's white, Dana's long strawberry blonde straight hair hanging behind to pass the middle of her back, and Gerald wearing a pair of Ray-Ban olive green, lensed gold-rimmed General Douglas A. MacArthur-style sunglasses, even though it was cloudy and overcast, to meet and exchange greetings and pleasantries. Tio at the King Ranch called us last week. He said you may be by here and for us to keep a lookout, Dana intoned as it began to rain lightly and thunder is heard in the distance from the west. He's a good guy, Gerald chimed in. Yes, he is, Jasper said. Wonderful man. Great family, added Lon. All four walk up the road to the house, Lon explaining how far and where through they had come already to Gerald, as Dana points all around in every direction, explaining to Jasper, we have 85 head, 65 mama cows, 4 bulls, the rest are calves. Some calves will go to sale, mostly our bull calves. The heifers will stay to build the herd. Looks like spring has sprung, says Lon, while looking around and points out how beautiful things are. Yes, the blue bonnets, Mexican purple sage, and vermilion Indian paintbrushes all turned out nicely so far this year, Dana replies. Have you ever thought about selling the ranch? Jasper asks. No, this place has been in my family for over 150 years, Gerl says. Oh, Jasper responds. Why are you looking to buy? Gerl asks. No, mumbles Jasper. I noticed you do not have a cattle guard swing gate, Lon says. Yes, we do not have a cattle guard swing gate, Dana tells Lon.
All right.
All right, so our guest has been Robert McKenzie. He is the author of The Chair, which so far has 4 volumes, and the 5th and allegedly final volume is on the way pretty soon. Thanks for being on the show, Robert.
Stephen and Bean, thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it, and thanks for publishing my books.
We will have you back.
Get over there to Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube and watch the trailer. And, again, it's been great having you on, Robert. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
All right, people, next week we've got our guest is going to be John W. Howell. He's the author of The Last Drive. And after that?
After that, we have a couple of comic book guys, Wells Thompson and Dalton Shannon.
Yes, and then the week after that, Carl Palmer's doing an Emerson, Lake & Palmer concert in Kentucky, which means we're going to play a rerun so I can go to the concert. And we're going to repeat the Jenny Wong episode. She's the author of Girl Wears Those Shoes. And then after that?
After that, we have Joe Sochek. And Joe Sochek wrote a book called Surviving Gen X. So it'll be interesting to listen to. And after that?
After that, the author of A Beggar's Bargain, which is going into pre-sale in the next week or so, that's Jan Sykes. And we're looking forward to having Jan back on the show again. And then after that?
And then after that, we've got Vincent Panettiere. And Vincent's a writer, screenwriter, and an agent, and all kinds of he's a real interesting guy. So tune in for that. And we will catch everybody again next week.
Yeah, we didn't have time for all of our commercials this week, so we'll try to catch up next time. Thanks for stopping by, everybody. See you next time.
See you next time, everybody.
You're listening to The Voice of Indy.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word. Support our guests. then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.